And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Now, here's a guy who just doesn't give up, Lloyd Pye, author, researcher, lecturer. He's spent more than 30 years of experience writing about the origins of life, human origins as well. And, of course, as you know, he is the caretaker of the very famous Star Child skull, and he believes that it could make history, maybe sooner than later. Lloyd, you're getting close, aren't you?
We definitely are, George. There's no doubt about it that we've had a major, major breakthrough with this recovery of a fragment from one of the working areas of the human genome, and that it's not just a working area. It is one of the most important working areas. So we've really never had a better thing happen to us in all of the 13 years of research we've been doing.
Quick highlight on what the Star Child skull is, Lloyd.
The Star Child is it is a true bone skull found in Mexico in about 1930 that people for most of those years until the early 90s believed was a deformity. And then in the late 90s, it came into the hands of a couple, Ray and Melanie Young of El Paso, Texas, and Melanie had been a neonatal nurse, and she suspected that it was not, in fact, a deformity as everyone had assumed, that it was too symmetrical, the bone was too light, nothing about it looked human, none of its physical parts are, in fact, matched with a human. So she was convinced that it was something else and came to believe that it was likely the skull that would belong in the head of a gray alien. And eventually I came to believe that as well. And then for a long time we thought it was a hybrid, but then as more refined genetic techniques came online and we began to apply those to it. Within the last couple of years, we've had three major areas of discovery that have shown in every case that it's not human-alien hybrid, it's just an alien.
It's straight alien. Explain what the skull looks like, Lloyd. Paint us a picture here.
Well, it has a human-like appearance, except none of its parts are like a human. Its eye sockets are very shallow. It has a very different alignment of its neck area. Its neck is about half the size of ours. Its brain is much larger for the size of the skull than it should be. It has no frontal sinuses. It has much larger inner ears. It has the knot in the center of the rear of the head that we all have where our neck connects. It has a dent back there. Its neck doesn't connect there. It connects in a completely different place. It's flat in the rear of the head, but the upper left and right rear parts of the head are expanded, and yet it has a crease down the middle of that. All of these things, and it has a very small lower face and a roof of its mouth is flat instead of arched. Everything about it indicates it has a very small, narrow lower face, even though the lower jaw is missing, and it has just that heart-shaped look that people who see gray aliens say that they have. It has those outward physical features are in that skull. So it's not impossible at all that it is, in fact, the skull of a gray alien.
Can you tell what kind of a nose it had, Lloyd? You know, slits or a human-like nose?
No, we don't have that, but we do know that it's different from a human, significantly different from a human nose, in that if you look at a human skull, you'll see that as the brow ridges, from the brow ridges down to the nose, there's almost invariably a dip of sorts, of some degree or another. There's either, you know, it can be as large or as small, but there from the brow ridge down, there's a dip. Star Child doesn't have brow ridges, and there's no dip at all. And the nose, instead of being narrow at the top and widening as it goes down, starts out at what looks like the same length that's going to carry all the way down. So, but it's broken off in the middle, so we can't be absolutely sure of that. But certainly at the top, it is designed completely different from a human nose, as are the brows above those very shallow eye sockets.
Does it look more human than like a gray would look?
I don't know. I think it looks more like a gray, frankly. There are no physical parts of the Star Child skull that match up where you can say, oh, that's just like it is in a human. There's not a part of it, not a single part of it that you can say that to. Plus, notwithstanding the fact that the bone is just completely different. The bone is much lighter, it's much thinner, and it's two or three times as hard. It's like cutting sheet metal when you try to cut the bone. It's very, very different because it's loaded up with collagen, and that collagen is to the extent that we have in our, the enamel of our teeth, which is the hardest parts of our body. The whole skull is like that. So, plus, and on top of that, you have fibers woven through the matrix of the bone, very durable fibers that are in there like rebar and concrete to add extra strength to it. So that is just not human. That's just there, not only is it not human, there's no other bone on earth like that. That bone, the bone in the star child, is absolutely unique on planet Earth.
And Lloyd, if it was an ET, what was it doing there? What do you
think?
That's
a very good question. I would suspect maybe that its ship might have crashed. You know, its craft might have crashed. I don't know. It was visiting and couldn't get away. It fell sick, fell ill, died. I there are any number of scenarios one can suggest. But as so far as I know, it's the only one of its kind that's ever been found here. So that's my best guess, or at least never come to light. And 900 years ago, who knows what was going on, what brought it here, what caused it to die here. We can spin scenarios all night long.
That's true. And we call it a star child skull primarily because it was found near the bones of a human woman, right?
Well, no, it was found near the bones of a human woman, but we thought it was a child because the initial test that we had done was x-rays that indicated that the piece of maxilla that was with it had teeth down and teeth buried up in the bone of the maxilla. So the guy just said, oh, well, if you have teeth down and teeth up, that's a kid in the range of 5 or 6 years old. So we just said, okay, it's a star child. Later, when dental experts began to examine it, it came and skull experts began to examine the degree of suturing in the skull. Everybody agreed, no, this is an adult of some advanced years because the teeth that were there were considerably worn, much more than a child could ever do.
Tell us more then about what's happening with this human genome project with it.
Well, we've had a geneticist who's been doing, as finances permit, what's called shotgunning, which is where you just go in and you just take whatever comes out at random.
Right.
And you hope for the best. In the star child genome, as in we assume it's going to be like a human genome or the higher primates genomes, of around 3 billion base pairs. We have, you know, a little over 3 billion base pairs. Chimps do, Neanderthals do. So we figure it's going to be in that ballpark somewhere. He has pulled out over 30,000 base pairs of those 3 billion. So it sounds like a big number, but it's really 0.001%. And all of it, unfortunately, up until recently, has been in the non-working parts of it, the non-coding, or what people know as junk DNA. Everybody has heard that term, junk DNA.
That's right.
About 98% of the whole 3 billion base pairs, about 98% of our genome, doesn't do anything. It certainly doesn't make proteins that the rest of the working 2% makes. Now, to say it doesn't do anything, that's not necessarily true because our body conserves it very well. Year after year, human after human, those aspects of our genome are conserved. So they're doing something, but nobody can figure out what. It's not making proteins. Only about 2% do that. That's the working part. So the geneticist always said, we have to pull something out of the working part. He began to call it the golden needle in the massive haystack. We have to find a fragment out of the working part so I can see what proteins it makes, so I can compare it to something that we know and understand and, you know, see how it compares. Everything he was pulling out of the 30,000 of the non-working part didn't look like human DNA. You run it through the NIH database and it comes back. Some of it is human-like. Some of it they can't find in the database, which means it's not likely to be found on Earth. So it's very, very different. And then he recovered 4 fragments of the mitochondrial DNA. And that was extremely shocking because in mitochondrial DNA, in all 16,569 base pairs in all human mitochondrial DNA, there are a maximum of 120 mutations, maximum. The oldest of us, black Africans from South Africa, have 120 maximum of those 16,569 base pairs. Neanderthals have 200 different mutations. The new the new hominin denosovas, they have 385. The star child projects, based on the four fragments that we have, which is almost 10%, projects to have between 800 and 1,000 differences. Between, from 120 maximum, the star child is going to settle in at 800 to 1,000. So we knew that almost a year ago. So we've been very excited about those two things, but we've been needing that golden needle out of the functioning 2% to really have something solid.
Well, you're getting there. You're knocking on the door now, Lloyd. We're going to come back, talk a little bit more about the Star Child skull, and also we'll take some phone calls with you. Lloyd Pye, our guest this hour on Coast to Coast AM. Lloyd, if this creature happened to have been all human, would you have known that by now?
I think we would, absolutely. I don't think there's any mistake, and especially with the new thing that I was talking about, beginning to talk about as we ended the last segment. As I told you, we were looking for something out of the working part of it, and finally, not only did he find a golden needle, he found a diamond needle. Not only did he find it from a working part, did he get a fragment from a working part, he got a fragment from one of the most important parts in the human body, one of the most important genes, and not just in human bodies, everything has one of these. It's called a FOXP2, which is a contraction of Forkhead Box P2. And what it does is it is a master gene. It controls in your body the effects of 300 other genes. There's a downstream cascade. When the FOXP2 makes proteins, they go down and they impact 300 other genes. So when you're being made, when you're gestating, when your brain is being made, when your voice mechanism is being made, your heart, your lungs, your guts, the whole, from head to in your torso, not your limbs, but your torso, the inner parts of you, that's what's being made apart by the FOXP2 and other things. So when something goes wrong in the FOXP2, it's a disaster. You can't, there are just a few known mutations in it, and it's only one base pair, one nucleotide, one single nucleotide polymorphism or SNP out of 2,594. That gene is 2,594 base pairs long, and if one goes wrong, you lose your ability to speak. You will never be able to speak. But there are only two or three things like that that are acceptable as mutations that don't kill you, see? So it's one of the most highly preserved genes in the human body. And all of us, George, who are normal,
I don't think any of us are normal, Lloyd.
But all of us who are health-wise normal,
right,
let's leave it at that, health-wise normal, have the exact same array of base pairs in that gene. All 2,594 are exactly the same in you and me and virtually everybody listening to my voice right now. The same. No variation allowed in this important gene, because why? Anything goes wrong, the spill down to 300 is going to kill the fetus, and that's it. So if you're born, you have it right. Now, the star child, we have a fragment of that gene, 211 base pairs long. 211. That's 8% of the whole thing. That's a pretty good size fragment.
It's
a great size to recover from something that size. Much, much better, 9.5% with the mitochondrial DNA in four fragments. In one fragment, we have 8%. So we can tell an awful lot about this from those 211 base pairs. If you pull the same exact 211 base pair fragment out of the human genome, and you pull it out of some other animals like a mouse, a dog, an elephant, a possum, a kind of a frog called a Xenopus, all of these things are visible, or you can see it for yourself on the new essay that has been posted on the Star Child Project website. I invite you all to go take a look and look at the illustrations there. But on the Star Child Project website, on the menu on the left, you'll see something that says DNA latest. Click on that, and boom, there you'll see the essay, and in there are the diagrams. And you'll see that in the 211 fragment for a rhesus monkey, you have only two base pair differences. Two of the base pairs of the 211 are different in a rhesus monkey. In the mouse, you have 20. In the dog, you have 27. In the elephant, you have 21. In the possum, you have 26. In the frog, in the possum, you have 21. In the frog, you have 26, right?
Right.
These are differences, single base pair differences in that 211 base pair fragment in all these different animals. In the human, they're all what they are. And the star child, relative to the human, all those differences are relative to the human that I just told you. Relative to the star child, there are 56 differences, George.
Wow.
Twice
as much.
Any other animal, twice as much as the frog or the dog or any other thing that's high up. In other words, the star child is stranger than any animal on Earth. It's more, has more variation in that one fragment. And if you expand that out, just like with the fragments of the mitochondrial DNA, if you expand that out to 100%, it is so different. It's 50% different. I mean, it's just incredible. You can't have 1, 2, 3 max, and you're dead, and the star child has 56 in a 211 base pair fragment. It would extrapolate out to about 600 in the whole gene. This could be
the evidence we all need.
It is. I mean, it is. Now, I have no idea how science is going to try to talk its way around this one. They're just going to say, well, it's still a fragment. They haven't proved it yet. You have to recover the whole genome. Well, that's true. We do. We still need the money. We still need the investment money. We still need to do a full recovery of the whole genome. I'm not arguing that. What I'm saying to you and everybody is we have now enough evidence that an investor who is a moron ought to see that we can do this, that all they've got to do is give us what we need, and we're going to be able to make history at a level that history is virtually never made. We are going to change all of reality for all of humans who are all the humans who are alive and all the humans that are ever going to be born in the future. Our lives will never be the same. This is the equivalent of the Wright brothers flying and putting us in the air. This is the equivalent of going to the moon and putting us into space. This puts us all of us in a whole new reality, and it's going to happen. Sooner or later now, and now it looks like much sooner, we're going to find somebody with sense enough to see, you know, these guys really have something here. So that we're very excited about it. We could hardly be more excited. It's the thing we've been looking for. And as I said, the geneticists had been saying, we need a golden needle. We need a golden needle. And when he called me to say what he had, he says, it's a diamond needle. It's way better than we had hoped for, because you just, the FOXP2 is so respected for the power that it has and for its high degree of conservation, of its lack of mutations in all humans.
Sounds exciting, yeah. Lloyd.
You can tell from my energy.
Oh, you always have been in the 12 years I've talked to you. Let's take some calls here.
All right, no
let's
problem.
Go to Jim, truck driving in Detroit, the old hometown. Go ahead, Jim.
Good evening, George. It's a pleasure to talk to you again.
Thank you.
All right, I have a quick question. Have you guys tried doing a forensic reconstruction, like, you know, a clay, you know, putting a face on a skull type thing?
Yes, that's been done, and you can see the pictures of that on the Star Child Project website, and particularly in the Star Child Essentials ebook. That has probably the best array of pictures. That was done by Bill Munns, and I think he did a very good job.
All right, next up, Holbrook, Arizona. Catherine is with us. Hi, Catherine. Go ahead.
He just asked my question. I was asking about a reconstruction.
Well, you get another one then. Go ahead.
I have no... How much does he need to find out this DNA?
Well, to find out the DNA, we need a couple of million. To film everything and do what we need to do, we need a total package of about $7 million.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Bye-bye.
Okay. Too bad you can get a television network, give them the rights, and
no, we're not. We're going to make two documentary films that are going to go in theaters, you know, like that. So it's good. It's much, much bigger than TV, George. This is not a TV show. This is a movie. This is a documentary film that goes to theater level.
It is. I agree with that.
You know, it is. So we just have to do it at that level, and that's really, it's cheap.
And worldwide, too.
What we're getting for two films, that's dirt cheap. Everybody that's in on this wants to be in on it, and they've cut their prices to the bone just to be part of the history of this thing.
Next up, we go to Fort Wayne, Indiana. Eric's with us. Hey, Eric, thanks for calling.
Hey, how you doing? I just lost train of thought, but I thought that we were the humans. We were the aliens. Like, we were only 3/5 a human being, but no, for real. Is it possible that we could talk about different things that we know about, like Benjamin Banneker or Alexander Pushkin, people like that? Benjamin Banneker, he created the clock, and Alexander Pushkin, he gave Russians their language. And these guys were black, and I just wondered if we can get that type of education nowadays. Thank you. Have a great night.
All right. Good. I think that's a question for an open line day, Lloyd.
That's not something I can deal with for sure.
No, no tie into the Star Child project there. Hank in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Hey, Hank, go ahead.
Hey, George, first-time caller, and come on out and move the movie and the documentary and the science to New Mexico. We gladly welcome you.
There you go, Lloyd.
Well, come up with an investor, and we'll certainly talk about it.
Well, let's do it. Let's put something together. But here in Las Cruces, we're wondering, what is the connection, possibly, of the Star Child and the FOXP2 gene? Maybe, I guess you're hinting towards it, but as it's in us, and we have perhaps devalued or devolved into that. Thanks, George, and thank you.
Okay.
No, the FOXP2 is a gene that virtually every creature, every higher organism on Earth has a form of the FOXP2 to a greater or lesser extent, but they have something like it, something that's recognizable as FOXP2-like. Ours is just ours. Everybody else has something considerably or less, you know, less considerably different, but nothing as different as the Star Child's FOXP2. That is off the chart, as you'll see if you go to the essay and look at the diagram that shows the ones, you know, that are chosen to compare it to.
Lloyd, your excitement level for the Star Child skull has not diminished in all these years at all.
Well, I've known from when I first laid eyes on it, George, in the first few weeks, I had serious doubts. I thought it had to be some kind of deformity. But when I started talking to experts about it who knew the various aspects of the skull, and they would give me their feedback, well, you know, I can't explain my part of it, but it has to be some kind of deformity. You hear that from 12, 15 guys, and suddenly you're thinking, you know, nobody knows what this thing is. And after, by the end of 99, I was convinced. I had convinced myself, because if you have that many physical differences in a skull that functions, where the thing lives and gets up into a, you know, some kind of ripe old age, then that gene code of that creature, whatever it is, has to be vastly different than ours. And in 99, we didn't really have the capacity to tell much about the genome from a base pair by base pair array. It had to be done with primers, and that wasn't really telling us a whole lot, because you had to know what you were starting out with primers. But now the technology has caught up with what the Star Child needed in the last couple of years, and it's just been nothing but clear sailing for us, basically, as far as proving what we need to prove to show to investors and to show to the world this thing is an alien. This is what we say it is.
Let's go to Merced, California. Jason's with us on Coast to Coast. Jason, you're up.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Yeah, I called because I wanted to know if the alien, you know, Star Child skull, if any of the DNA had 4G blood, because 4G is very rare, and, you know, there's 5G, 4G, you know, 5G, 5G, and I was wondering if they had found 4G.
Was there any blood that they could test at all,
no,
Lloyd?
No, absolutely not, and I've never even heard, I don't even know what he's talking about, 4G, 5G, 5G, I don't know what that is. I know Rh positive, Rh negative, you know, like that, but I don't know what he's talking about.
What is
about.
That, Jason?
No,
well,
blood.
Basically, basically what it is that, with the Sioux clan, for example, you know, certain clans of the Sioux Indians had 4G blood, and they passed it down from generation to generation. And, maybe other Native American tribes and tribes around the world have passed this down, but very few of the population has this certain genetic code.
Okay. No, I did not hear of that at all. But there are no blood spots at all on this thing, is it?
No, it's 900 years gone. I mean, there's no blood at all.
All right, let's go to Louisville, Kentucky. Toby, take it away. You're on Coast to Coast.
Hey, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing,
I was wondering how far the Star Child's location, where it was located, how far was that from the where the Mayan civilization was?
Pretty far away. It was up close. It was in Aztec country, what became Aztec country, but it was 900 years ago. But it was about 100 miles southeast of Chihuahua, so that's northwest Mexico.
Has anyone, Lloyd, found anything even close to the Star Child skull?
Close, when you talk about the cone heads, if you're talking about something that doesn't look human, I would say the cone heads. Is there anything that looks like the Star Child? No, not that I'm aware of. But as far as something that could well be not entirely human, I think the cone heads have a very good prospect of being that way.
The cone heads were developed, right? Weren't they elongated on purpose?
No. The cone heads, if you were to have taken my head as a baby or your head as a baby and shaped it to look like a cone head, the brain in it would still be about 1,400 cubic centimeters.
All right.
The cone head brains, which are clearly from the x-rays, in the brain all the way filling it up, are 2,800 to 3,000 cubic centimeters. Their brains are twice the size of our brains. But there are other things about them as well. They have human-like faces, but the teeth don't look right, the jaws don't look right. There are things about them that are very, very different. If you've never had Brian Forster on your show from Peru,
no,
the conehead guy, he's the guy that has sent us the samples that we're going to get to work on as soon as we can have the money to do it. I mean, it's expensive stuff.
Oh, of course. How many coneheads have been found?
Several hundred.
Okay, that's a lot.
Several hundred. They're all up and down Peru, and they're also in other countries around the world. They have been found like in Malta and places like that. So the coneheads seem to have been what I believe is going to prove to be an alien civilization that existed around the world. Now, are they entirely alien? Are they human alien? I think they have a very good chance of being human alien-like, you know, not unlike the Star Child, which is proving to be very different. But we won't know until we take out their DNA the same way we're trying to do it. We're doing it with the Star Child. And we intend to do that with the Coneheads just as soon as we have the money to do it.
Lloyd, what's new with the website, LloydPie.com?
Well, mostly out of LloydPie.com, you have the follow-up to my book, Everything You Know Is Wrong, the e-book, Intervention Theory Essentials. And Intervention Theory Essentials is a very extensive follow-up to Everything You Know Is Wrong for those who have just always bug me about when am I going to do something else, when am I going to do more, when am I going to follow up with that. So that ebook, which is available now, I'm very proud of it. It goes over the beginnings of everything, the beginnings of the solar system, the beginnings of life, and its theme is that really everything on Earth, in my view, in my research, indicates to me that the planet itself has been terraformed from day one, because everything that came to Earth and everything that developed, it had to happen at a certain time, in a certain window, in a certain way, and everything happened just that way, in exactly what was needed, at exactly the right time, in exactly the right amounts. It's incredible. When you look at the whole thing, it's as if we've been being terraformed from the beginning of the existence of the solar system. I know that's a big bite. I know that's hard for people to wrap their minds around. But if you read the e-book, Intervention Theory Essentials, which is available on the LloydPie.com website, you'll see for yourself.
You got it. Thanks, Lloyd. We'll be back in a moment as we talk about auras and other dimensions.